Great. Good morning, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully, everyone has will be getting together with their family and enjoying some time together with your family and enjoying some good food. With that said, I'm calling the meeting to order at 8:35. And why don't we begin with the Pledge of Allegiance? Right hand over your heart, ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag, United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. All right. Why don't we move on to board member roll call?
Gloria Alvarado.
Here.
Natalie Alvarez. Jesse Benron.
Here.
Kathy Boyd. Rob Claudio.
Here.
Eric Codorniz. Eric. Mike Daniel. Laura Holland Lease. Lorraine Holland Lease. Terry Hollingsworth.
Here.
Chris Horton.
Here.
Trung Lee.
Here.
John Luker. Annalisa Lukes.
Here.
Doug Mangione.
Here.
Barbara Mason.
Present.
Gary Matkin.
Here.
Ernesto Medrano. Carlos Oregon.
Here.
Mike Ruane.
Here.
Todd Sward.
Here.
Breniel Tumor-Bias. Breniel? We have 13 members in attendance, so we do have a quorum.
Fantastic. Thank you, Adriana. All right, moving on to public comment. Anyone from the public?
If anyone from the public would like to address the board, you may raise your hand. I don't see anyone calling in. If you are calling in, you can hit *9 on your phone to raise your hand. I'll give it a few more seconds here. All right, I see no hands raised at this time from the public.
Great, thank you. All right, moving on to the action items. We have several items to cover, items 5 through 10. And so starting with the stipend policy, I'll pass this over to you, Karma, to present.
Good morning. We are asking for the board to approve the slate of policies. So in front of you, you should have a copy of several policies that were provided in advance of the meeting. These policies are to, number one, update existing policies. So the stipend policy, self-sufficiency policy, WIOA youth program requirements policy, WIOA youth program participant eligibility policy, incident reporting of waste, fraud, and abuse policy, and the adult dislocated worker program eligibility policy are policies that are required by the state, but then also are revisions made to existing policies so that we are in compliance of the current federal and state mandates and or guidance. So we've reviewed these policies with the couple of these policies with the youth committee. which were approved, which were the stipend policy and the self-sufficiency policy, were both, and as well as the WIOA Youth Program requirements policy, were reviewed by the youth committee and approved to be promoted up. In addition to that, the WIOA Youth Program participant eligibility policy was reviewed on November 4th and voted up to be approved, or voted up to be reviewed for approval. The incident reporting of waste, fraud, abuse policy was not reviewed by the one-stop committee policy because of lack of quorum. However, there was a policy that was in place in 2013 that by law we needed to revise because the law changed from 2013 to 2014 between WIA and WIOA. The state requires that this policy is updated to include all of the current legislation. So this is a revision to an existing policy in order for us to be compliant. In addition to that, there is another policy, the Adult Dislocated Worker Program Eligibility Policy. This is something, this is a policy that we had in place in 2017. This is a revision to that policy to provide further guidance. It's not a new policy. It's something that we just updated so that it's more, it's clear to our service providers of what the expectations are. So we are asking for this committee to take a vote on the slate of policies for approval with the request that we can make non-substantiated changes upon EDD's direction. And so with that, we're asking for the slate of policies to be approved.
Karma, just a question. Typically, when I think in the past, when we've been presented with revisions to policies, where we see the strike ups or the edits, are we missing that or?
No, so no, I normally don't do the strike ups or the edits. So Okay. Typically we just give you the policy. So the committee level, we might show the strike ups, but we do not do that with the full board.
Oh, I see, okay. Maybe that's where I'm getting that confused. So so basically we're being asked to approve these revised policies on the basis that in most cases, with the exception of one, that the appropriate committee has reviewed it.
That's correct.
And approved it, approved the revisions. Okay.
That's correct.
Gary, you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'm wondering if we could get from Karma and staff if there are any significant implications in these policies for the actual day-to-day operations of our programs. Is there something in these policies that changes things so that we're going to have to make changes to our procedures, our staffing, or anything of that nature? It's a little hard to sort out these policies from the actual implications of them.
That's a great question, Gary. So all of these policies are being revised or updated so that we can avoid compliance findings because there is some action being taken by our service providers that puts us at risk of being not compliant, whether it's a current process or it's an understanding. Each and every single one of these policies does impact the service provider, but the reason why we have to enforce these policies or make these changes to these policies is to avoid a compliance finding. So some of these policies have been put in place or have been recommended by EDD that we revise so that we aren't out of compliance because it may be missing some language or it's not, it's loosely defined in the current policy. And so there is a request to tighten up our policy so that way the service provider can be compliant.
Okay.
So the answer is yes.
All right. And just one other question. Do we have the committee chair, the committee leader from the various committees that are represented that could provide some color to these policies here with us today, Karma?
So for the youth policies for the 5, 6, 7, and 8, They were all reviewed by the youth committee. So we could have the youth committee chair speak about the youth committee's review of this policy and their stance on that. For the incident reporting policy, that in fact, that impacts every single one of our committees. Because this is the rules on, like, if there's waste or fraud or abuse of federal funds, what the process is. And like I said, that policy had not been updated since 2013. And currently EDD is requiring that we update that policy and submit it as a part of our current audit. And then the adult and dislocated worker program eligibility policy, again, that would have been reviewed by the one-stop committee in the past. And when we did write that policy, we did ask that committee to give us permission to make non-substantiated changes back in 2017. But because of the timeline, we're basically presenting this back in front of the board because we have made some changes and it had been so long since we've looked at it.
Okay. And who's the chair, Karma, for the youth committee?
So John Luker is the chair for the youth committee. He is not on the call today.
I see. Okay. Any other questions regarding these policies, 5 through 10? Doug?
Yeah, I just had a question. On the stipend, I don't ever remember seeing a lot of this, and I know we talked about it at the youth committee, but who do you have a specific person, Karma, that monitors this? Because it seems like it's really, there's a little bit of a discretion to give it out. Do you guys, you know, someone goes in, obviously you audit, is that correct? I remember that was one of the questions that were.
Yeah, so with the stipend policy, remember we started that earn and learn program, right? And so with the earn and learn program, we can't pay them wages, you have to pay the participants in the form of stipend. And so in order for us to be able to pay that stipend, we have to give the service provider guidance on how that stipend payment is made, when it's made, to ensure that you've received their payment for attending that education or training program. So for the youth program, Maggie Lopez is the program manager over that one. So she goes out with the service provider. She meets with them monthly to review their performance, right? And looks at all the participants that are engaged in a earn and learn program. She also reviews their invoices to ensure that if there are stipend payments that are made, that the participants' names are listed. And so it's well documented that they did receive a stipend and how much that participant received so that it's in compliance with our policy.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just one comment. I like that in the income levels, they're looking at self-sufficiency, and these figures really reflect what it takes to live in Orange County. Years ago, it was just get them out in some job, and you know, you're living in your car. So I appreciate that now there's some very realistic views on what wages should be. Just a comment.
Thank you, Doug. Any questions before we ask for a motion on this? Okay. All right. Do we have a motion to approve action items 5 through 10?
I'll move.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Mason, second.
Thank you. Adriana, I'll turn that over to you.
Roll call. Gloria Alvarado.
Yes.
Natalie Alvarez. Jesse Benron.
Yes.
Kathy Boyd. Rob Claudio.
Yes.
Eric Codorniz. Mike Daniel. Lorraine Holland Lees. Terry Hollingsworth.
Yes.
Chris Horton.
Yes.
Trung Lee.
Yes.
John Luker. Annalisa Lukes.
Yes.
Doug Mangione.
Yes.
Barbara Mason.
Yes.
Gary Matkin.
Yes.
Ernesto Medrano. Carlos Oregon.
Yes.
Mike Ruane.
Yes.
Todd Sword.
Yes.
So we do have a 13 yes votes.
Right. Thank you so much. Thank you, Adriana. All right, moving on to the information items. Item number 11, Business Services Committee update.
I think that might be the, so it should be presentation for Employment Development Department.
Am I looking at the wrong one?
That's okay. We've asked Rob Claudio to give us an update on the Employment Development Department for Orange County Unemployment.
Okay, I believe I have that presentation I can pull up for him. Just one second here.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to do my best today to represent Maritza Gamboa, who's our labor market analyst, and she's the one that typically would do these presentations with regards to our labor market information, but she is not available today. And so I'm just going to walk you through a few slides that she prepared for today. The first slide is regarding the Orange County Economic Overview, monthly unemployment rate, and this goes through the most recent data, which is October. The unemployment rate in October of this year was clocked in at 4.7%, which is 3.5% lower than it was a year ago in 2020, and it's 10.2% lower than the highest peak in May of 2020, which is right at the height of our pandemic. Our next slide is industry employment through October 2021. This shows you the three largest industries, professional and business services, trade, transportation and utilities, and educational and health services. They account for 50% of the county's total non-farm employment. I know just by when we get to some of the ads that companies are posting throughout the region, you're going to see how those numbers equal just based on what they're posting with regards to the types of jobs that need to be filled in the region. Our next slide is industry employment, September to October of 2021, the month over change. Here, between September and October, none of the 11 sectors experienced any employment declines. I think we're all very much aware that employers are finding it's difficult for them to find qualified job seekers. And I think that's one of the reasons after the reopening through the height of the pandemic, I think that's where most employers are these days. In addition, government added the most jobs, mainly due to the continued expansion in local government and education. On industry employment, October 2020 through October 2021, the year over change. Leisure and hospitality added the most jobs with 63% of the increase in arts, entertainment, and recreation. And this is, we were pretty much expecting this, especially for our region with such a high amount of hospitality and tourism. And once the reopening of a lot of the venues began to occur, then the hiring, immediately followed. And only two sectors had year over declines, financial activities and construction with very, very minimal. We'll have to take a look at that because I know that construction still continues to see a pretty good vibrant opportunity for increase in the region.
I have a question real quick on that. What's the difference between financial activities and the business and professional and business services?
That would be how they're classified. So it depends on how the employer may have, when they apply for an employer tax ID, they classify themselves as doing this type of work for this industry. But, you know, it would just, you know, depend on that.
Okay.
And so it goes to that. The deeper dive of the data and to get more specific information, I can always have Maritza get back to you on more specifics.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, if you could send me an email, then I can forward it to her and then she can give you more details.
All right, thank you.
Okay. All right, now we go to our monthly job advertisements, and the data shows advertisement posted on these employer sites. These are the ones where they utilize the data to get collected. They use Conference Board, Burning Glass, Help Wanted Online as part of the data series. The total number of ads in October of 2021 was 4,515. It is 2,827 more ads, or 167% increase from May of 2020, which was at the height of our pandemic, and 674 fewer ads than in January of 2020, from that period of time. October of 2021 job advertisements, this tells you the top five cities, top five employers that had the most jobs advertised, Irvine leading the way, Santa Ana, Orange, Anaheim, and Costa Mesa, as you can see. The employers with the most job ads, that would be the top one was Children's Hospital of Orange County, Allied Universal, Rivian. Rivian, I had to double check because the name sounded familiar, but I couldn't remember from where. And they're one of the electronic car manufacturers here in Orange County, and they increased their presence and increased their hiring. They're based in Irvine. California State University Fullerton and Edwards Life Sciences Corporations round out that portion of it. Our industries with the most job ads. Again, this goes back to the very beginning slide, healthcare and social assistance with the top job ads at 809. Next, it's retail trade, manufacturing, finance and insurance, and then professional, scientific, and technical services. So the number of job ads certainly have been increasing compared to where we were. I know during the pandemic and as we continue to progress through it, the numbers seem very dismal at one point in time, because I would look at our monthly numbers and they weren't looking very good, but it seems like we're kind of rebounding from that. And then the occupation job ads, management have the most job ads, sales and related, followed along with healthcare practitioners and technical, office and administrative support, and it's rounded out by business and financial services. One of the things that, that kind of concludes the slides that Maritza had put together for us. But one of the things that I wanted to kind of just share with you, I'm just gonna have to pull it up here, because I did ask, the big issue that we're all finding that we're having we're faced with. Let's see here. Sorry. All of a sudden you pull something up on your computer on Zoom and it wants to go slow. But let me try it again. Okay. The one thing that I've been talking to Maritza and some of my other counterparts that also collect labor market information, and this includes the community colleges I had. Jesse Crate was with our leadership meeting at EDD last week, and one of the topics that we, are all, grappling with is why we don't have enough qualified workers, and why the employer community is struggling so much. LMI is trying to collect data to support some of the speculations that are behind what's going on, but some of the things that they're working on, and so Maritza just shared with me some of the speculations, so they're it hasn't been validated, but they have enough information from some of these that kind of give us a, a bit of a guide as to where we may be headed. The first one was the pandemic caused a professional reassessment to find other career opportunities for many of the job seekers. Those in healthcare or similar professions felt too stressed, perhaps undervalued or burnt out to continue in that environment. This is causing an additional shortage for healthcare workers that already existed. Another example are teachers who found themselves having to become proficient in IT and computers during all of the, you know, learn and teach at home to assist in virtual learning environments. Many found themselves exhausted teaching in person and virtually at the same time. There's also the continued fear of COVID-19 since we're still trying to grapple with, you know, the pandemic and trying to get, you know, past it. And then the people that were able to afford to quit or resign or remain unemployed, their significant other is employed as a result. And so, you know, they felt, you know, comfortable in not having to pursue a career opportunity at this time. And some workers have a financial cushion, the lack of going on vacation and leisure activities. A lot of folks have been saving money. So, you know, as a result, they have more to be able to get them through. Also, job seekers have more choices and have more demands, benefits, higher wages, remote work. That one's a big one. We've noticed it in our world where we're in EDD, when we're hiring, a lot of folks are asking us, am I able to work remotely? And then jobs in retail and leisure and hospitality, you know, it's definitely difficult to find folks for those jobs. In some instances, some of the job seekers are finding that the work is just not safe enough because of so much interaction with the public and they have to be in person. There is no remote work option for them. And in many instances, they find that the pay is competitively lower than some of the companies are offering these days. So those are some of the speculations that our data analysts are trying to, you know, put more or obtain more data to validate. But these are some of the items that have come forward as a result of us asking the questions and getting all of the feedback that we've been hearing from our employer community. Deck, question?
Yeah, talking about the raw just personnel numbers in the different fields, how do you arrive at that for just Orange County? Is it based on what employers in those fields are sending in unemployment payments, or how do you get that? How do you arrive at that number?
Yeah, the actual validation of the data for Orange County, that I'm going to have to defer to Maritza, so she would have to do that explanation for you, because it is a combination. They do some surveys where they cold call like specific companies, and they also go through the employer tax records. So some of the data is validated through that, but it's a combination of different things. But I don't do the analysis portion of it, unfortunately, but I can certainly have her get back to you, Doug, on that to get more specifics.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Rob.
Okay. And then Jesse?
Hey, Rob, again, maybe a question for Maritza, but I mean, can we like unpack those numbers a bit? Because like an unemployment, one is like you only include people who are actively seeking work, right? So that 4.9% is like a relatively like low, or I guess, relative to what happened, a low number. So if all those people aren't looking for work for a variety of reasons, they're not counted in the unemployment rate, correct? Yeah. So then really we're trying to focus on getting a 4.9% unemployment rate to like, let's say 3% if we're lucky. So we're really only managing the 2% who are actively working, looking for work. I guess like, is that really what the numbers are telling us? So the whole thing of like people not interested in working, people like, potentially looking for better offers. I don't know how you really define that, whether you count them as working or not working. Some of those people aren't even included in the data set. So we're just going to consider them not in the labor pool. And for our intents and purposes, not really looking to service them.
Yeah, but it's a combination. It would be a combination of things, Jesse, because like I said, they do some in-person surveys or by phone. They do follow up with some of the unemployed, you know, customers. But to validate and to provide you with more specifics on how the breakdown of the data is, then I would defer to Maritza on that for you.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to get is that there doesn't seem that many workers to fill the jobs as they stay open. Essentially, we just don't have the labor force in Orange County to fill these jobs. There's really only 2% that we could really work with as far as identifying jobs. And of course, they could be a little bit more selective as to what those jobs are, but there's not that there's these abundance of workers who are looking to come to the workforce to fill these jobs. These employers hypothetically are going to be looking at unfilled jobs for a very long time.
Well, and then the other thing is you have to also consider the amount of people that come to Orange County to work. You know, we have a whole bunch of people that commute here from the inland region, from the LA County areas, and even south from San Diego County. So some folks may not live here. They may not be part of the statistics of those that are part of Orange County, but we do have a big workforce that commutes to work in Orange County.
That's a great point. Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, I had a quick question. What about people that have passed away from COVID? How do you get them out of those numbers?
Well,
are they part of it?
Yeah, they wouldn't be part of it. Yeah, these are active. They typically are the active job seekers. So, yeah.
I just wasn't sure as, you know, as the unemployment rate went up, did that include people that had passed away from COVID or not?
Well, you know, probably the only statistic that would pertain to is that there would be less of job seekers looking for employment. The reason behind why, whether they passed away or they moved out of the state or out of the region, that would be a different item attached to it.
All right. Perfect. Thank you.
John?
Hi, Rob. Good morning. You know, I understand there's a number of employees quitting their job because of COVID mandate, and they're, you know, they don't want to comply with that. How does that work in terms of unemployment benefits?
Yeah.
Are they entitled or?
Yeah, they would have to go through a determination process, and the way the unemployment insurance code is written is if you quit, you know, your employment, the burden of proof is on the claimant to prove that they quit with good cause. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the good cause determining that if the person, you know, for whatever reason, you know, because there's a myriad of reasons behind why somebody would choose not to and not comply, that would have to be up to an adjudicator with an employment insurance branch to make that decision.
Okay. Yeah, just wondering because there's so many people out of work right now, and including those individuals that choose to leave their job for whatever reason. So thank you for
the question. Yeah, that one's going to be a tricky one because, you know, for somebody to prove that, you know, there's good cause for them to want to leave a job, and you know, I'm sure people could come, you know, up with medical reasons or substantiations as to why they could not comply, you know, mm-hmm. and that, you know, that again goes to the adjudicator to determine that. So that would be tricky. Yeah. But I noticed in the media, I think it was in LA. Maybe out of a job soon, you know, that are also part of this. They'll have to contend with that and whether they're able to be found eligible if they apply for unemployment. That'll be interesting.
Right. Thank you so much, Robert. I appreciate you sharing some of the reasons for these shortages that we're seeing. I know that the Hospital Association, we're taking a deeper look at what's going on, what's impacting hospitals. I've reached out to Maritza to provide us with some data. One of the other issues that we're facing in healthcare would be the aging workforce and the fact that our education institutions and training providers unfortunately are not producing or not training the individuals at a fast enough rate to meet the demand on the employer side. So that's another area of focus is pipeline development that we'll be focusing on. And that I'm sure will come into play during our own discussions here among the board is going deeper into the pipeline and seeing what's really going on among education providers and training providers.
Yeah, I think where we're at right now, it's certainly where we were struggling to fill jobs in certain industries like healthcare because there's such a huge demand even before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I could think of, I used to be part of the Placentia Yorba Linda School District, their Career Technical Education and Advisory Board. And they, before the pandemic, and I haven't been on that board for a while, but even well before the pandemic, they were struggling to find qualified instructors to, you know, instruct youth on career technical education, you know, career paths. And so I would imagine that you add pandemic and retirement to that, that makes it even more difficult nowadays.
Yeah. That's right. Shortage of faculty. That there's another issue right there that we have to deal with.
I know. So, right. I know. It seems like we have a never-ending plethora of issues to contend with, and right. I guess we're all going to have to hold hands and try to get each other through it, right?
That's right. Great. Well, thank you so much, Robert. Really appreciate your presentation.
Yes, and I will forward the additional data questions to Maritza for Jesse, or if you could just send me an email if you wanted additional data with regards to the information that was presented, I can forward them to Maritza and then she can get back to you.
Thank you so much. All right, so Karma, I'm not sure what's next because my agenda said that it was Business Services Committee first and then Youth Committee. So where are we on the agenda?
Okay, so next is information items. And okay. So for the information items, what we'd like to do is offer the opportunity for the committee chairs to discuss any highlights from those committee meetings. So the first couple of items are the one-stop operator, the WIOA Title I Career Service Adult Dislocated Worker Program, and then AB 1111, which are led by Barbara Mason. So if Barbara, if you have any highlights that you'd like to share about the committee meeting and or performance.
Sure. So we had a committee meeting and we went through each of the providers and each of the one-stops in detail. And I'll leave it to Karma's team to go into more detail. But what we did see is COVID is still impacting, particularly in the disabled worker area. People are not wanting to come out yet, not wanting to venture in. So there is still, even though people are coming back out and things are starting to look better, we are still seeing impact of COVID. And what we did ask for, and I think we continue to ask for this, is not just numbers. When you say there were 17 placements and we're sort of congratulating ourselves that we've got these placements, where are these placements? Are they full-time jobs, part-time jobs? What type of jobs are they? Had to push for that, feel like we do each time. And when we got a breakdown this last time after we asked, I did not see healthcare. I didn't hear healthcare mentioned in there. So I think that remains a concern. We at the board level, we identify these strategic growth areas, but I'm not convinced that at the one-stops we're connected to those growth areas and that we are feeding people into that pipeline. So I think that's something, Karma, in 2022, we really need to dig into deeper.
We agree.
Yeah, I could speak on behalf of healthcare and Barbara. I think that we're dealing with a knowledge gap. I think that many of our hospitals are not, you know, familiar with the services offered through the local workforce development boards, and so we're going to be focusing on really elevating. You know, the local workforce development boards in Orange County and across the Southern California region, because there's clearly a disconnect.
Yeah, there is. And we really need to connect them.
Yep. Yeah. So that's going to be
one of our... Sounds like a lot of the one-stop jobs are like warehouse jobs and things mm-hmm. like that, which are good, but I don't know that we're aligning with those strategic growth areas we keep identifying.
Yeah, I agree.
So then next is the Ready, Settle, Seat program, and then the Summer Training and Employment Program for students with disabilities. So that's STEPS. So I don't know if someone on the youth committee wants to talk about what we covered since John is not available.
Do we have anyone from the youth committee other than John?
Yeah, but what was the question again? I was looking just, over these.
So just to talk about any highlights from the committee meeting.
I think most of our, as I remember it, most of our meeting was taken up with what we went over today. You know, and I think there were questions about the income levels. And just for everybody else too, I know the holiday season, this isn't exactly a good read around the fireplace, but there really is a lot of information, especially with the language that's used, that's WIOA specific, and you might as well be, you know, speaking French. It's really a good idea to get in that. One of the things I think we were talking about was the connection between the high schools and the in-school youth programs. I mean, we were going over that, or I was just looking at something where we were talking about having counselors be a part of this system, because I think they're still working in a silo. You know, they have the provider has his their sets of rules that they have to go by, and there's a lot of them. And then the counselors are in their little workspace, and they have issues that they have to go over. And if we can get them together, because it's even with the pandemic, if you have an in-school youth program, there should be plenty of people that you could reach out there with the high school. So I don't know if that's happening. Someone from the one of the providers may have more on that. But I think everyone was a little taken aback that, geez, you know, you could be in local high schools. There's going to be plenty of people. And the counselors, you know, would have a finger on, you know, who's at risk, who's going where. So I think one of the things we should, and again, to Barbara's point of connections, and I think probably the biggest thing we could do as a board for One Stops is really making sure those connections are made. There doesn't seem to be a synergy between, you know, our group, the One Stops, the providers, and industry and high school. So if we can do anything in the next year, it's really, you know, bringing that around. You know, and then everybody, you know, all these kids have phones now. I'm the only one using cash anymore at the donut shop. You know, the 13-year-olds come in and use PayPal. You know, so they all have phones. And I think, Karma, we were discussing something about really more online format that you could sign up. You don't have to wander into an office and meet somebody, you know. They're all in their rooms on gaming, talking to their friends. That's the way they interact anymore. If it wasn't for school, most of them would never see a real person, you know, but this is the way they do business. And it would behoove our providers to figure that out and get that going. So I think we all have the same, you know, issues. We're trying to find that synergy between what we can all do as a board and as an organization to help move this forward.
Thank you. And then for the National Dislocated Worker Grant.
I had a question on that. How do we make those connections with the high schools? Because I mean, I have connections to Orange High School here in Orange. How are those connections made?
Kathy Boyd is with Orange County Department of Education. She just recently joined our board. We coordinated a meeting with our WIOA Youth Service Provider and Kathy Boyd to just start making that connection. She's been really instrumental lately in making sure that any of the programs that we begin or have information on regarding youth are going out to all the high schools within the Orange County Department of Education system. So they are getting that information, and we are working with her to just kind of expand information and knowledge about our programs. So I believe that in 2022, we'll have more connection with the school systems in Orange County than we've had in the past by having her on this board.
Perfect, thank you.
You know, I don't know how if this would work, but we're doing things in our industry with organizing workers and where you, you know, GIS fence an area so everybody gets on their phone and they see an ad come up. I mean, that might be something in high school or in the colleges too, where as they're all swiping and an ad comes up, there's something for the one stops, you know, and at least the information's out there, because probably 90% of the people in Orange County have no idea what this is.
I agree with Doug. I think he's spot on about really needing a more modern approach that aligns with not so much a focus on getting people in a traditional brick and mortar store, you know, one stop. Really much more focused on using modern technology.
So just to remind the board, we are working on that virtual LMS learning management system, so that virtual one-stop concept. So hopefully within this next year, we'll be able to introduce that to the community and have a platform so that people don't actually have to come into the facilities, they can do it all online. So we're really—
And then you have the mobile vehicles that you can use to augment that, right?
That's right, you're right.
Okay, any other questions? Or Carmen, did you have something else?
No, I just want to make sure, because I'm trying to make sure we get through this fast. So the next committee is the Business Solutions Committee. Annalisa, if you want to provide any highlights of anything that we discussed for that committee in regards to performance and—
Sure. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. The biggest highlight that we talked about at our committee meeting was the fact that we hosted, among other events in October, a networking event for the business community. And that was really nice to have seen members of the business community attend and show up at our facility in Garden Grove. And also we talked briefly about anticipating an opening of a facility in South Orange County. Carm, I don't know if we have any more updates about that as of late November?
No, that there's still a negotiation over that contract. Unfortunately, we thought that it would be up and ready or that we'd have good news by now to go in front of the Board of Supervisors. There's been a few glitches in that process that we're trying to work out with the landlord and the county real estate department. Hopefully I'll have an update for you guys soon, but I know the goal is still to get it as soon as possible. We're working towards it.
Mm-hmm. And so whenever that is finalized, then we would have a similar event to introduce our services to the South Orange County area. And I believe there were some connections made that evening with some large multinational companies as well. Is there anything else that we need to discuss or miss anything? That was the biggest highlight.
I think that you did a great job covering our highlights. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And we look forward to having more of those types of events.
Right.
Thank you. So Terry, since you don't have the agenda, the next item is grants updates. So on page 62 of your packet starts the grant updates. So for the grants, as you know, we received a $3 million career grant from DOL. We are currently working on hiring adequate amount of staff to support that grant. The grant is to provide 600 dislocated workers with rapid employment. So we are working to solidify a contract with a third party to help us with the hiring. That $3 million also includes the LMS system or the virtual one-stop system. In addition to that, it includes another mobile unit. So that's one of the most recent grant that was awarded to us. There are some pending grants that we're working on, starting on page 64 and 65, or technically 65, 66 of this. There is the American Rescue Build Back Better grant that we've submitted a $500,000 proposal. That is just one part of that grant. It's $500,000 for the planning. There are more opportunities in the future for more funding under that Build Back Better model. The other grant that we are submitting an application at the end of this month is a $3.9 million grant for micro businesses. It is designed to support businesses within Orange County that are small employers, so five or fewer employees, with up to $2,500 in funding to support them for, we'll call it basic needs, like it could be anything from registering their business with the state or with the local government or getting their vendor's license. There are several activities that they're allowed to utilize the funding for. We will be submitting our application next week in hopes of getting funding. And if we are awarded, we anticipate being notified in the end of December in hopes of being prepared to start getting information out to the community in early January. And so those are the highlights of the grants that we have pending that we have applied for and have been awarded. Any questions or concerns about the grants?
I have a question about grants in general. So we've recently learned that there's going to be a number of grants coming down through the federal and state government, like lots of money available. And, you know, from our perspective, and it may be true for other industry sectors, it's somewhat overwhelming for, you know, to go through all of these grants and determine which one you should apply for. And out of full disclosure, just wanted to share with everyone, I also serve on the City of Los Angeles Workforce Development Board. And one of the things that they are planning to do is to allocate funds to provide consulting services to industry sectors to help them sort of work through and determine which grants might be appropriate for them, and helping also to help prepare the grant application. Is that something that we can do as well, Karma?
So that's a great question, and I think it's something that we can definitely explore. Right now, with some of the grants that are coming down the pipeline, we are convening with community. We're asking the entire community to come with us and say, okay, this is a grant out here. What are your ideals? Here's what we want to do. Is there a way for us to work together? So for example, the two grants that I just mentioned to you, the Build Back Better grant, we had a conversation with many community stakeholders, and we went in a joint application for that. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of where we connect with the community and say, here's an opportunity. Are you interested? What would you like to do with it? The micro business grant, because it was very specific on who needed to be included in that, we went out to all of the chambers and the city managers throughout Orange County and asked them to partner with us to make the micro business grant available to small businesses in Orange County. So when we have grant opportunities, we try to connect with the community as a whole, but keep in mind, because we are the county, I do have to ask the Board of Supervisors for permission before I go after any grant. I don't have permission to just go after whatever I want. I have to follow county guidelines in terms of what we're allowed to go for, what we're not allowed to go for, what's appropriate, and so forth. Because keep in mind, with a lot of these grants, there are administrative maximums, meaning that only 10% of the money can be spent on administrative costs. Well, sometimes that's not feasible for the county to go after. So there will be opportunities that we may pass on if there are limitations on the administrative funds, because it costs a lot of money for us to go after and manage these grants.
Right. Okay. That's helpful in terms of understanding how that works. Any other questions regarding grants?
Yeah, I have a question real quick on this micro grant for the businesses. I'm on the Orange Chamber of Commerce Executive Board and their board of directors. I haven't heard anything about this, but we do have a new executive director, probably 4 or 5 months. So it was probably missed. Who do I have her contact about this?
I'll forward it to you so you can forward it to her. I'll forward you the email and the contact person we have, but we probably need to get current contact information so we send it to the right person, because I don't want it to be a conflict by you sitting on this board.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What I'll do is I'll forward it to you so you can forward it to her so you can see who's on the list, because it may have went through. I'm not really him or her. I don't know, but I'll definitely forward you the solicitation, or not the solicitation, but the ask that I send out, so that you can get it to the appropriate party. And I'll need that back today because I need to turn that application in. So I'm not sure that they didn't respond back, because Orange did respond back on our veteran job fair. So I think the chamber is responding.
Huh. Okay. I'll ask her about that as soon as we're done here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I figured out what was wrong, Karma. I printed off the 18th agenda. So things have changed since then.
Yes.
So I think I know where we are. Item 14, regional initiatives.
Yes. So for the regional initiatives, we're still making progress of having industry sector conversations and, like I said, going after some grants. Annette provided an update that we are coordinating with Coastline Community College and their industry sector conversations. We're still coordinating with other entities to engage with sectors and have conversations, as well as we're working on some of these grants like Build Back Better and Good Jobs to incorporate industry sector strategies in terms of these grant opportunities and possible employment opportunities and training in the future. So that's the update for that.
Mm-hmm. Anything else under that item number 14? Okay, all right, then we're moving on to 15, Chair and Director's Update. I don't have anything, Karma, do you?
I do not.
Okay, all right. So why don't we open it up? Any questions or comments from, go ahead.
Yeah, one last thing, Terry, before you open it up. We have the calendar. I just need you guys to look at it and open the calendar for next year. So that's page 67, the last page of the packet.
All right, that's page 67. Okay, so we have the, all right. And this would be just for our information to see if we have any potential conflicts. Anything else you wanna add?
Nope, I just wanna make sure that this this coordinates what we agreed to in the past in terms of moving our board meetings over so that we have consistent performance information. And so I just wanted to make sure, highlight the calendar for the year and see if there are any questions or concerns before we establish this calendar.
Yeah, you know, it was sort of tricky with having this meeting today. I know we were trying to have it on the 18th, and I'm looking at November 23rd for 2022. Any other options there, Karma? Because I know sometimes people leave and take, you know, go out of town.
We can move it. So the only thing is, it can't happen before Zet, but we can certainly move it. If you want to, when it gets closer, we can hold a special meeting to move it.
Okay.
Or we can establish it now.
Okay. What's the preference of the executive committee?
I think it would be wise to move it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay, so why don't we, I don't think we have to decide today because we can do that at a future meeting. But yeah, this one really caught my eye, so I think we really should move it.
Okay, we'll work this year to move it.
Okay, all right. Okay, am I missing anything else? Is that pretty much it?
That's it.
All right. Anything, any comments from anyone? Any questions, concerns?
Chair, I have one. So Karma, let me know because it's not on the agenda, but some of the people on this board were participants. With the audit that was done of the one-stops, what's the follow-up? Like after you the recommendations, how do we ensure that they've implemented the recommendations in a reasonable time?
Great question. So we submitted the materials to the state. It was due November 1st. So we're waiting for feedback from the state on what we submitted. We are required in terms of next steps to start implementing our recommendations with the one-stop centers, as well as updating the MOU and infrastructure agreement. So Maritza will be setting up meetings with the one-stop operator to start putting together a strategy to make the recommendations or updates to the system as advised by the board.
Thank you so much.
Karma, it's Annalisa. With regard to service providers, I know we had talked about that during the year. What response, if any, have we received to date from other providers that could potentially provide services to us?
Great question. So remember we hosted the open house to try to get new service providers to learn more about our programs and services. We did have quite a few new providers attend. I think that we need to continue to open up our doors, our host open house sessions to the community, because I think that even though we tried to get the marketing and outreach information out there, I think that it's going to be a continuous effort. I'll just be honest and say that we're going to leave it open for people to continue to send us information about their programs and services. And I think that what we want to do is quarterly have some sort of session where we explain or share information about our system and how organizations can either A, partner, or choose to be service providers.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions?
I have a comment, not a question.
Sure.
Yes, I just wanted to mention that one of the things that we spoke about at my ADD leadership meeting last week, and this is in conjunction with not only this board, but also the two other boards in the region, is that we all have business service teams. EDD does have staff dedicated to that. So does the County of Orange, the City of Santa Ana, and the City of Anaheim. And one of the things that we were doing prior to the pandemic was what we were attempting to minimize duplication of services for employers, so that we're not, trying to get to the same employer when someone's already got to them or, you know, has information about following up on job leads. So we are reinstituting our regional business services approach meetings to our region. We look forward to beginning those at the beginning of January sometime. But I think that it'll be very helpful as we continue to work collaboratively with the other two boards and our staff included, as we try to still get to the bottom of trying to provide more value-added services to our employers so that they can, if they want to select any one of our locations throughout the regions, they can, and then we can all collectively serve to fill their job orders as we are working with our employer community. But I just wanted to mention that.
Great, thank you, Robert. And that's for, these are EDD regional meetings?
It's going to be a what we call business service regional meetings. So business services, and then the teams include staff from EDD, from the County of Orange Business Services, the City of Anaheim, and the City of Santa Ana Business Services.
Okay, got it. All right. And you'll let us know about the upcoming scheduled meetings.
Once we schedule them, like I said, we're going to have some highlight notes from the meetings. I'm hopeful that they're going to be there probably bi-monthly, because monthly seems too aggressive sometimes. But we're hopeful that it'll just, continue to provide more positive outcomes for us in serving our employer community throughout the region.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Anything else before we adjourn? Okay. If not, I'd like to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy yourself, get some rest. And don't eat too much. And this is the last meeting of the year. So we made it this far. So get ready for 2022. All right. So meeting is adjourned. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.